Hello and welcome to LeadTel TV. I'm Brian Kramer, your host, coach of coaches, keynote speaker, and author of HJH Human to Human. Today, I have the sheer pleasure of interviewing Karen Hayward. She's the Chief Marketing Officer and Managing Partner of Chief Outsiders. Today, I'm interviewing Karen and we're gonna be talking about some really interesting things. I know you're gonna find value. For instance, we're gonna be talking about what is a Chief Marketing Officer that you can have as a fractional Chief Marketing Officer. How cool, right? The second thing that we're gonna talk about is her new concept, her idea, and it's going to be in her new book, Growth Gears. We're talking about how you can build a powerhouse marketing department in any company and what that formula is. And finally, we're talking about what the differences are between Canada and the United States when it has to do with marketing your company, or even just dealing in international marketing. How cool is that? So please help me welcome Karen, and let's get to it. Here's my interview with Karen Hayward.
I feel like we already know each other so well. So welcome to the audience getting to know Karen. But Karen, welcome. And what is a fractional CMO?
So a fractional CMO is a chief marketing officer that is able to work on a part-time basis with a mid-sized firm to help them build a plan to grow the business. And we can be involved in execution. We can work as an interim person. Essentially, what we found is that mid-market companies don't always need the services of a high-powered CMO, but when they need them, they really need them. And so this brings Fortune 1000 expertise to a mid-market company on demand with the exact specific expertise needed for the time. And our focus is, you know, deliver value every 30 days because we operate on 30-day contracts. So we're 30 days away from not working.
That's fascinating and nimble. It makes everybody nimble, which has not always been the case. I'm curious, as a fractional CMO and as having been a CMO, a full-time CMO, what have you seen in the changes of that role being a chief marketing officer? How's that changed over the last 5 years for you?
So what's really interesting is when you're a VP of marketing or a CMO in a firm, you're usually there for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I've been up to 11 years in that role. You end up building a strategic plan, you execute that plan, and then you tweak the plan. Right? You're just adjusting here and there until the next big thing happens sometime later. The way we work is we're always in building the plan and getting the right resources in place. And then when that gets to steady state, then we're off to the next company to build the plan, get the right insights, execute. And so we have developed this tremendous pattern recognition and efficacy with which you can build a growth plan, get execution underway, equip the company with the right resources so that they can sustain it. And what I have found is the CMOs who really like unraveling that ball of yarn as to how are we going to take this company that's stuck and grow it, that's a different skill set than the person who gets really excited about tweaking the operation and operational excellence. They're just two different skill sets. And so my theory is that we see so much turnover in the CMO role because CMOs are kind of one way or the other. They're really operational or they're very strategic. And once the plan's built and it's delivering, they're like, okay, well, where's the next big problem to go solve? So that would be one thing that I think is true. And then the second thing is that, boy, marketing has become way more complicated. And when you think about how complicated and technical it's become, I postulate that there's no more full stack CMO. I'll tell you like two conversations from the last couple of days. One is with a company that's a software as a service where they're transitioning from one platform to another. They need a product marketing CMO who has done that kind of transition before and knows all the gotchas, knows all the hidden issues, and knows how to effectively relaunch a product and go through that transition. Another firm, Software as a Service, IT Services out in Silicon Valley, they need world-class demand gen. I mean, those skill sets couldn't be more different. So, you know, you can get access to the right skill set when you need it that can be operating at a world-class level. So I think the granularity that CMOs have to deal with today is just overwhelming.
I'm curious, how do you look at everything that could be done and focus in on one or two things?
Now, I think for us, it's probably easier than for most full-time CMOs because we spend a lot of time upfront trying to understand what is the CEO's vision for the business and what is it that are going to be the one, two, or three things that are going to deliver on that. Well, you know, like where's the low-hanging fruit, right? So we just worked with an academic online learning company, $100 million in revenue, and they want to grow faster. And when we looked at their landscape and we did an analysis and we did field, worked with their field organization to understand, you know, how the customer experience was rolling. What we actually found out was they had so much leaking out of their funnel that if we just plugged the sales funnel, did nothing more, we would overachieve on the top line revenue growth target. So it's really getting inside with a fresh set of eyes, because I think sometimes when you're the CMO for a long time, like I was at Centerbeam, you don't see the dust on the windowsill anymore. So getting a set of fresh eyes to come in and say, well, what about this? And, you know, we were able to identify three or four automation efforts that would make the productivity of their field force, you know, significantly more productive and at the same time deliver a better customer experience. It's really interesting. A lot of companies, so if I would have one tip for anyone that's listening out there, go and get the voice of your customer. Because your customers will give you the insights that you need to identify what, along with your employees and a competitive analysis, but you triangulate on those three things, you'll get really good direction. You know, we were working with a glass company in Los Angeles. And the company, when we asked them, what's your secret sauce? Like, why do your customers keep coming back? You've got these tremendously loyal customers. And they said, well, we're the quality glass people. When you want to build a high-rise building, you want quality glass, you choose us. Well, when we went and interviewed the clients, that's not why the clients bought from them. They said the reason we choose that company is because they deliver on time, every time. And when you have a skyscraper going up and you need glass to fill those windows, you need it when you need it. And so they are known as the go-to people for, you know, consistent, reliable delivery. And so if you can imagine, you have the client's messaging going this way and what the customer wants to buy going this way, and they're not even close. So, you know, start with your customer. They will take you, you know, down a good path more often than not. You know?
Yeah.
I could tell you about Chief Outsiders. We did our own messaging effort. We hired a firm because you can't do this yourself. We hired a firm and we typically sell to CEOs and decided we want to spend more time in private equity. So we hired a firm to go and interview all our private equity partners. Private equity people don't even talk about CMOs. They talk about assets. They talk about rich playbooks and revenue engines. So we changed all our messaging. So on our website now, we message to CEOs and we message to private equity, and they're two different talk tracks. Yeah. And guess what? We did that and our business grew significantly double digits in that space. Point that I would say that most organizations don't do that is pretty easy to do is just to do win-loss analysis, not by the marketing team and not by the sales team, because you need an independent view. So whether it's you get a college student from a marketing class or whatever, but to go out and understand why are you winning in the marketplace and why are you losing, and then to take those learnings back and figure out you know, what part of it is messaging, what part of it is go to market, and what part of it is sales execution. I think there's just tremendous gold in those hills.
Yeah. Well, that's for sure. So on your LinkedIn profile, you include an image of the book, The Growth Gears. Fascinating title. I'd love to know more about what that means.
It is a market-based framework to grow companies. And it starts out talking about the difference based on research we've done with the University of Texas on why certain companies grow more quickly than other companies in their industry. And the U of T Business School was able to identify that there are really two types of CEOs and leadership teams. There are those that are very operationally focused, and those are the people that tend to grow by acquisition, and they focus on productivity and efficiency. So they're pedaling their bicycles faster and faster and faster and faster. Market-based CMOs are typically led by people from IT or marketing, two types of organizations that always have to be looking outside the window. So when you're looking outside the window, you're looking at trends, demographics, competitors, and all of that shapes how you execute internally. So it's like adding gears to the bike instead of just trying to pedal the bike faster and faster. So the first piece is all about insights, how you have to, you know, some of the things I talked about before, how you have to understand the voice of your customer, understand the competitive landscape, and understand really, where do you want to be? What is your purpose as an organization? Those market insights inform a strategy, and then the strategy gets executed. And the execution comes with the metrics and what resources you need and how do you configure it and all of that. So it's really written, it's very simple to read. It's written in a with lots of examples and lots of charts so that you can do it yourself and get your company on a better plan to growth if that's one of your goals.
What surprised you about the research? What did you go into thinking and then come out on the other end going, oh my gosh?
There really was a there based on leaders' orientation. I mean, I think even the researchers, this was not research done by us. This was the U of T. We worked with them. That really, if you change the orientation, sort of dogs can become cats. And if you incorporate some kind of outside data collection, outside information gathering, you can really create a much more compelling go-to-market strategy that will actually accelerate your revenue.
A lot of companies' goals are to get acquired. And especially in the area we live in, Silicon Valley, or New York, or any hotbed, or just about anywhere in the world, their growth strategy is to eventually exit. And so, as an exiter, you yourself, I'm sure, have been a part of both growing into and then selling or exiting on some level. Do you have advice for marketers on how to, when they find themselves in those similar situations, what should they do? They worked so hard to get there, and now what then?
Well, first of all, I would say that, you know, I've been on both sides of that equation. I've been involved when we acquired a company, and I've been involved when we were acquired. I think they're incredible learning opportunities. So it's wonderful to go through the process. I would say that in many cases, it's a very difficult process. In many cases, the culture of the company acquiring you is going to be very different from the culture of the company you have worked so hard to create. And so I think you have to be somewhat flexible, and you have to kind of stop holding on and start looking forward and embracing the change. And that's not easy to do because change is really hard. I think as a good marketer, you can have a huge impact because you can partner with the change management. Usually there's a transition team that gets put into play, and I've had lead roles in that transition team kind of situation. And so the impact you can have is fantastic. Whether you decide you ultimately want to stay with the acquiring organization, that's a whole other, you know, kind of decision I think you have to make. But I would say embrace it, go for it, switch teams quickly, because you're either part of the old or you're in with the new. So switch teams quickly, embrace the change, and, you know, don't underestimate the impact that you can have. And the learning will be incredible. Incredible. Some of the best learning I've had as a VP of marketing or a CMO or as a VP of sales has been when I was part of either being acquired or getting, you know, acquiring another organization.
What are a couple of things that you learned? What stands out for you?
Well, when you get acquired, how important it is to have your data in one place and the importance of how to set up a data room, how to get the executive team all on the same page, how to make sure that you've got all of your client base lined up. You know, I think people and so much of the acquisition activity today is private equity, and they're pros at this. They will seize the day and your price will go down if you don't have all of your information buttoned up. So I think getting good advice well ahead of the activity and starting to really think about how to get things documented and line up the data that they are going to be looking for so that you're not in complete scramble mode as the process unveils itself.
It's interesting to me about everything that you just said, the life cycle of a CMO, and I don't know if this is still true, but at one point it was like, I think it was like 14 months on average for a CMO's role to exist at a mid to enterprise company. Maybe that's the same or different from what I heard. It was a couple of years ago, but still, no matter what, no matter how much it's changed, that's not a long time. And by the time change happens, marketing's, as you know, and I know, marketing is different than sales. So marketing takes time. There's no silver bullet that affects change with sales, you know, and all of that working overnight. How have you seen that change, or do you think it's changing given all the options out there and how marketing and sales can work together?
You know, I think that's such a good question. It has been talked about for a long time, but I think it's getting worse, and that's sales and marketing alignment. And I think that marketing, people tend to understand, executive teams tend to understand what sales is. Many mid-market executive teams don't really understand what I'll call big M marketing is. Strategic marketing with a plan, with data, you know, and executing versus random acts of marketing. Oh, we're going to try this. We're going to go to this trade show. Oops, didn't work. Oh, you lose, right? So I think it's, if I were to give advice to a marketing person, make the VP of sales your best friend. That would be number one. Live in their world. Understand the pressures that they live under. I mean, I've done both roles. I've been a VP of sales. I've been a VP of marketing. And I've been a combo. When you're a combo, you default to the VP of sales because there's so many families that need to be fed at the end of the month that you better hit your number. And when you're in marketing, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, they're strategic. They're not focused. They don't have the sense of urgency. So I think over developing the relationship with the sales organization is absolutely critical. The second thing I would say is, revenue is job one. So making sure that you are in lockstep with the VP of sales. And if your role is to deliver MQLs, my advice is, that's marketing qualified leads, my advice is make it black and white. So you need to work with your sales leader to develop a definition, and I've written a whole blog on this, to develop a definition of an MQL that has no discussion points in it. Here are the 10 job titles we want. Here's the industry SEC codes we want. Here is the employee size or revenue size we want. Here's the geographic location. Those are all things that are binary. They either are or they aren't. And you got to work really hard to get that agreement so that you can focus on other things other than arguing every month that leads were terrible. So, you know, marketing and sales alignment, I think job one, and I think marketing needs to take the lead on it.
I'm curious, the pass off, the baton pass that exists between MQL, marketing qualified lead, and SQL, it seems to be a pretty difficult thing for most organizations. Would you agree? And how is that done? How do you see that working?
First of all, it's really changing. And it's really difficult. And that's why I really believe that for a marketing leader to be successful, they've got to over-energize on getting that definition and then getting the process in place. And it's so funny. I'm just working with an Edmonton-based company now, and this is the big issue. They have a new sales leader, and they want to put in a new sales process, which is terrific. And now we have to work through, well, so marketing is going to do this, and what is that agreement? Because as marketers, we know our leads go cold in 24 hours. We're dead. So we might as well not even served up that lead, right? So if you can get that handshake and then help automate as much process using some of the tools today that are available with AI and automation and CRM. And so you have to be as aggressive or as helpful, maybe is a better word, working with the sales leader who may not understand the automation opportunities that exist in CRM to help make that transition so that when marketing finds the lead, we're communicating, yes, we'll be back to you in so many minutes. And then we're following up with something else and, you know, buying some time for the sales force to pick up the lead. But that's gotten way more technical, and it's also fraught with, you know, a lot more opportunity because you have solutions like Drift, and I just saw another one this morning that can be hugely helpful in automating and garnering more information about the opportunity to help the salesperson even have a better call. So I would say, you know, early in the process, marketing really needs to focus on the problem we solve so that the client goes, oh, that's the problem I have. I want to learn more. Yes, these guys get me. And then you've kind of got to walk that buyer's journey. And I really agree with you. So I'm going to go back to this point that you raised, defining your sales methodology and defining your sales process is critical, because then marketing can do a better job supporting the journey. So this Edmonton company that I'm working with, they don't use a business case to help express the value of the service they're delivering. So I said to marketing, well, why don't we help them build a business case, and then they'll have a black and white number. The CFO's their buyer. CFOs buy on numbers. You know, and that's where marketing can help. But marketing has to have a good understanding of, okay, the sales VP is going to go from step one, and my exit gate is I get agreement to access the CFO for another discussion. If it becomes qualified, that means they have budget. You know, it can mean different things in different kinds of sales process, but you have to have those gates at each step if you want to have any kind of forecast accuracy, or you want to really, from a marketing standpoint, be able to support with sales enablement.
The forecasting is so awesome. I've heard that and seen, yes, forecasting become almost so accurate that it puts pressure on more on the sales team than it does the marketing team, because now, you know, we're trusting these numbers to, you know, have to close. And so if we're driving you leads and we know that these numbers have to close, and this is the forecast and this is what we've all promised, now we got to come through on that. Is it causing more pressure and more stress to have that information than less? And is it accurate?
Well, I think there's more stress when there are lots of surprises. You know, having been a VP of sales in SaaS companies and enterprise software companies, when you're not forecasting accurately, there's a lot of consternation and a lot of issues that the company gets faced with in terms of, you know, you might have to downsize if you miss your forecast. So there's a lot riding on making a forecast. And, you know, not the least of which is, do people have confidence in you? Are you in control? So I do think the sales leader is under a lot more strain and pressure at that stage. But often what I've seen, if the marketing leader doesn't do a good job setting up that sales funnel flow, all fingers just point up, we didn't have enough leads, didn't have enough opportunities, the leads were terrible. So, you know, it's easy to get into this blame game of, well, you didn't close enough, well, the leads are terrible. So again, I go back to, I think a really good CMO takes a holistic view of the entire sales funnel and works to get those agreements at each step and what enablement do you need along the way to make sure we hit. And then I guess if there are ever sales leaders listening to today's forecast, you know, things like Miller Hyman's blue sheet reviews are incredible tools if you're looking to improve your forecast accuracy and you're selling, you know, moderate to big ticket items.
I'm going
to
end with this one question here about your career, given the locations that you've worked. And now just before we got on, I even got to know that you were a copier salesperson as well. Really spanned all different areas of sales and marketing, and both in the trenches and all the way through to messaging and brand awareness. And so it's kind of cool to have that that breadth. And I'm sure that's why companies hire you to do what you do. I'm curious, though, because you were in Canada and then now you're in Silicon Valley. So tell me some of the differences and similarities that you see between the two.
Well, it's really different to have a really big career in marketing in Canada. So just if you were in financial service, there are 5 banks there. And, you know, maybe 3 or 4 credit unions. Everybody knows everybody. And everybody just switches deck chairs. Most of the corporate companies where, you know, I had my career for 20 years at Xerox, you're working for Xerox Canada. Now, it's a $1.3 billion company at the time. And it had its own research center. That has changed over time, where there's more and more influence and management coming from the U.S. because of the digital age and the digital world. The biggest difference in talent, I would say, is that Canadians are a mile wide and an inch deep. I am a mile wide and I am an inch deep. I meet an American CMO who has, you know, built their career at IBM Corporation or, you know, any of these large companies. They are a mile deep and an inch wide. So they will be public relations experts. They'll be product marketing experts, and they will have these incredibly deep careers. Whereas, you know, in Canada, in order to move your career, I worked in HR. I worked in operations. I worked as a general manager. You know, if you want to grow your career, and when you are a marketing lead, a marketing director, you're in charge of like 7 functions and you're not an expert at really in any of them. So you have to rely on experts. So you really learn to build good, strong partnerships. And I'm not saying that Americans don't, but Americans are so much more knowledgeable on their topics. Like we just brought on an ex-CMO from Starbucks. You want to talk about branding? I mean, he worked for Schultz. I mean, and built global brands. I mean, now there's someone up in Canada who works for Starbucks Canada. It's a little different. So I think the benefit of being Canadian is that I had to cover a plethora of functions and make sure, you know, they all didn't crash and burn. But, you know, I can't say I'm a global expert on branding or I'm a global expert on lead gen. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Totally. I think it means that it's the best of both worlds if you can live in both countries at some point in your life and really get 1,000 feet deep and 1,000 feet wide at some point.
I get to meet experts like you, Brian.
I everybody. Spencer here on the Lead Tail team. We want to thank Karen Hayward for being our guest on the show today. If you would like to continue the conversation, tweet us at LeadTail or our guest at HaywardKG. If you want to see the full video interview series, you can find this episode and more at LeadTailTV.com. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have ideas for the show? Do you know someone who would be great to be a guest? Drop us a line at studios@leadtail.com. Thanks.